At the halfway point of the Major League Baseball season, what can we possibly expect for teams that are trying to play their way into October? Hint, I'm not talking about the Yankees, Dodgers, Phillies, Guardians, Braves, or Orioles. Paul George is on the move from LA to Philadelphia. What about DeMar DeRozan, Klay Thompson, among others, including LeBron James? And do I have to get into the Bronny James being drafted by the Lakers scenario? Some wheeling and dealing has taken place in the NHL over the weekend as the draft and now free agents can sign elsewhere. Can Iga Świątek get over the hump and win at Wimbledon? What about a loaded men's side as Novak Djokovic returns from knee surgery? And Alex Pereira scores a huge win at UFC 303 Saturday night. The second half of 2024 has officially begun, and so will the latest podcast. It's all coming up, but first, these messages. I'm elated and honored to welcome in a new partnership here on the podcast. Are you familiar with Olipop Soda? If you're not, well, listen up. I haven't been a soda drinker for quite some time, but when I discovered Olipop and what they're all about, I was all in. Not only is it a prebiotic soda that's good for your gut, it's non-GMO, organic, with ingredients that you can actually read. That's right, no 12 or 14 letter words that you can't pronounce. And are you worried about the dreaded high fructose corn syrup? Not here, as there's very little sugar, 4 grams per serving. And then the flavors? You have vintage cola, orange squeeze, my favorite, tropical punch, banana cream, what? Plus the classics such as root beer, lemon lime, and ginger ale, which has a better taste. How could I forget the taste? Crisp, refreshing, without feeling bloated afterward, than the usual brands that you're familiar with. Right now, you can get 15% off at checkout when you use the code SODALOVE, and I'll get a percentage of that based on your purchase. It's a win-win for both of us. Please go to drinkolipop.com and use SODALOVE for 15% off at checkout. Thanks to the good people at Olipop, and an early thank you for shopping at drinkolipop.com. J-Reels here to spend a brief moment and share a friendly reminder to please subscribe, rate, review the podcast on whichever platform you listen to on the regular, just so we can increase the visibility of the J-Reels podcast to those who aren't familiar with it. Leave plenty of stars, write a favorable review. It will go a long way for the curious listener looking to hop on board to get a dose of entertaining and passionate sports talk. For the visually inclined, please subscribe to my YouTube channel at J-Reels as I post daily shorts and weekly vlogs, not only delving into the world of sports, but follow me on my journey to take the podcast and channel to new heights as I provide an in-depth, behind-the-scenes look at what it takes for yours truly to produce content on a day-in, day-out, week-in, week-out basis. It goes without saying how much I truly appreciate all of your support. And without further ado, the J-Reels podcast begins in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's get this sports podcast party started, all right?
The J-Reels Podcast.
Why don't you wait until July 1st to make an announcement? What a disgrace. He can rack up all these numbers in October, November, and December, but what really counts is let me see this in January.
The sports rebel without a pause, delivering fast-paced, jam-packed sports talk like no other.
Listen, I gotta call it as I see it. He is not a good player. I'm sick and tired of having to deal with the disappointment of this franchise. When does it stop? And yes, another winter that I can sleep in peace. Coming correct, directed, in full effect. Let's get it.
This is the J-Reels Podcast. Welcome aboard.
What is happening, my good people? Greetings. How are you? How's it going? How's everybody doing out there? What is the latest and greatest? Hope everybody's doing well, feeling fantastic, in excellent spirits. A new day, new week, new month, but same old fast and furious action-packed sports talk like you've come to know and love, as this is the J-Reels Podcast with your host, J-Reels. For my first timers, welcome aboard. And for those who have been banging with me going back to the very beginning, somewhere in the middle, or even as early as this past Thursday, I welcome you guys and gals back. And now that the second half of 2024 has begun, lots cooking, lots happening behind the scenes. Yours truly, full-time content creator, as I got a lot of balls juggling in the air. But nevertheless, you know I'm going to always come correct, directed, and full effect, as I like to say, when it comes down to the world of sports. And with a lot going on, even with this sports dead zone that we're starting to transition to, and I get it that free agency is going to be percolating here over the next few days, and as we get deeper into the month, even though with Wimbledon, and I'll talk about that later on, beginning today at the All England Club, but we have baseball, which I'm going to start off with, and I get it that's going to carry us pretty much through the summer and the latter part of August into September, when college football and the NFL will be part of our consciousness. But the reason why I want to start with baseball is because we could talk about the halfway point of the season, A lot of teams have officially gotten to that point, including my beloved New York Mets, who had a bad weekend against the Astros. And I'll get to that a little bit later on. But since they played 81 games, there are a lot of teams that have played more than 81, some that have fallen short. But because here we are at the start of a new month, and even though the All-Star break is in a couple of weeks, which is quote-unquote the halfway point, but a lot of teams will have already played 90 games, 90-plus at that point, I want to take a lay of the land to get into some teams that I feel are going to be in a Royal Rumble to get to October. And yes, I get it. We're still 3 months away from October 1st. And for any type of permutations when it comes to the AL and NL wildcard, we understand that a lot could happen. But it's good to kind of look into the crystal ball today just to get a feel, just to get an idea as to how these teams could shape up and maybe get themselves a spot into the postseason. Now, we all know, at least I feel, in my gut, and I'm sure for the sports fan out there, the diehard baseball fan, or even the good baseball fan, we already know that the Yankees, the Orioles, the Dodgers, the Phillies, I'll throw in the Guardians, and even the Brewers for that matter. Right there, that's six teams. And if you want to add Atlanta, that's seven. So you have five other teams that we're going to look at here to see whether or not they're going to make it into the postseason. And yes, you have some other teams that are on the fringe, which I'll have to include them now. And not to say that this is a lock by any stretch, but these are the teams that are going to be jockeying for position here as we get into the latter part of this month. Of course, we have the trade deadline at the end of the month, I believe July 30th. And you know that's going to be a big date for a lot of these teams that are going to look to buy to see whether or not that they could make a move here or two to have themselves set up for a decent August and September, the final 2 months of the season for them to play themselves into October. But when we look at it here, the teams that we're going to focus in on, and I'm going to start with the American League and the Red Sox. They have played well above anybody could ever imagine or even expect, because going into the season, a lot of people thought that, well, they don't really have a pitching staff. And with them losing Trevor Story, one of their big players there in the infield, he's done for the year. And this team has had to piecemeal it thanks to their manager, Alex Cora. And I'm sure that the powers that be, and I get it that they've kind of pivoted and have their focus on other ventures and other businesses. That's the Red Sox ownership group, whether it's the fund for the PGA, as they put $3.5 billion, part of a group that have put a lot of money into that, and with Liv, that personal investment fund or public investment fund that they've tried to get themselves involved and throw their hat in the ring with the Saudis and the Liv Golf group. So with that and a lot of other things that they got going on around Fenway, they haven't really put a lot of focus on the team. And I wonder if the fan base is going to have a bit of an uprising to say, we're in the mix here. We're in the wild card race. We may be an underdog type team, that not a vintage or a Red Sox team that is going to be near the top of the AL East, but a team that could certainly make some hay and wreak havoc, especially when they have that manager there who's already won a World Series, as we know. So the Red Sox, I think, now they're going to have to get some more reinforcements as far as pitching goes. I think that they could be in this race, considering that the American League has pretty much fallen off as far as those wild card spots. And even though I'm going to mention Tampa here at the moment because they're at 500, and I'll get into the parameters with the wild card race and how many games behind and where the race lies for both leagues. I know I didn't talk about Thursday's podcast. I didn't bring it up then. So, of course, with now it being July, and I could certainly take that 30,000 foot view from the top down to the bottom, not only with the divisions, because the divisions, other than a couple, whether it is the AL East in particular, and even the AL West for that matter, those are two divisions that look like they're going to be in a bit of a rock fight between now and the end of the season. But even Tampa, a team like them, where I thought that they were going to come back to the pack considering the success that they've had in the regular season over the last half decade plus. But the Rays are certainly trying to make their push to see whether or not that they belong and could be a team that could sneak in and maybe make it into the postseason. Kevin Cash, we know that that team is more built for 162 games as opposed to October. And granted, they did get to a World Series in 2020 during the pandemic year, but I don't trust them 100%, and you know that they could may make a move, a basement bargain move, to try to bring in another stick or maybe another reliever, probably not a starter, but that team has done it with smoke and mirrors to think how they've navigated the first half of the season, and it looked like they were going to be 5, 6, 7 games under 500, similar to another team who is a defending champion. I'll get to them in a minute. But for the Rays, give them credit. Now, will they be sustainable? Will this be a team that's going to be there when it's all said and done? Let's say as we get into the latter part of August and even into September, that's a big question mark. And I could see them falling off of the map here and not being a part of the wild card race. But you have to give it up because right now they are certainly within striking distance, only 3 games behind the final playoff spot for the wild card race in the American League. So there are a team that we have to, at least for right now, put on notice whether or not that they could be a team that will flirt with the postseason. Other teams of note in the Central, we could talk about the Twins, maybe even the Royals as a team that could maybe be one that will creep up here in the standings as we get deeper into the summer. And I'm not going to trust Kansas City. This is going to be a learning process for them. I think that they could maybe be in the race and be, let's say, 5 games back, or at least a team that is going to be on the outside flirting around with that 6th position there in the wild card. They're not going to win a division because I think Cleveland's going to run away with it when it's all said and done. And with Minnesota ahead of them, and Minnesota knows their way around these parts because they have been a playoff team in the past. They did win a division last year. And for the Twins, I think that they could be, I'm not going to say a sleeper team because I don't trust them 100%, but I could see them being a team that could have a run in them and get into October to the point where, who knows? And I don't think they're going to go far. I don't even think they're going to make it into the postseason, but they do have a bit of a pedigree, and we have to keep them on notice as far as the American League playoff picture is concerned. But other than that, in the AL West, as far as the American League goes, we know about Seattle. I left them alone for right now. But Houston, they had a good weekend against the Mets, and I'll unpack that a little bit further later. But with them now being a game over 500, and with the Astros coming all the way back, they were 12-24 at one point this season. And here they are, a game over, and this is without 2 of their big starters out of the lineup for Tommy John. We talked about Jose Abreu having to be cut, and pretty much putting this team together and trying to scotch tape, bubblegum, and with a new manager in tow with Jose Espada, it's going to be a team that I would think when it's all said and done, they may make it into the postseason. Now, as of a few weeks ago, I thought that they weren't going to click. I thought that they weren't going to be a part of the playoffs, and I understand that was a bold prediction on my part, and I may look foolish and silly when it's all said and done, but you have to give credit to what the Astros have done. I get it that their DNA, their pedigree, etc., that's something to be accounted for and has certainly proved me wrong, at least at this point. Now, mind you, they're still on the outside looking in when it comes to the postseason scenario, but they are certainly a couple of games behind and have made up a lot of ground here, despite the fact that the American League is overall, despite Yankees, Orioles, and even Guardians, is pretty weak. And then you have the Texas Rangers. I don't think this is a team, talking about one that's not going to click. They are 9 games under 500, and they just come off of a 6-game losing streak. They got swept in the process yet again in back-to-back series. I take that back. They did win the game last night. My apologies there. They were about to get swept 4 games in Baltimore, but they didn't win last night. They had the Sunday night game where they won 11-2, so I got to pump the brakes on the Rangers, but still, they are 8 games under 500. I know Max Scherzer came back into the rotation, and I got to see what he did on Friday. We talked about his performance there last Sunday in his return against the Royals, where he gave up 1 hit and no runs in 5 innings. And let me see if he pitched there on Friday. But for the Rangers, I don't know if this is a team that is going to have a run in them to get themselves back to October to defend their title. I can't see that. This is going to be a scenario where the Rangers are certainly going to have to go on one of those 20-5 or have one of those big months where they go 21-7 in order for them to get back into this playoff mix, because right now they are certainly about to be out to sea, and they may have a life preserver in front of them, but it is slowly but surely starting to slip away. And I don't care if Max Scherzer comes back to Cy Young form of his days with the Washington Nationals, and even Jacob deGrom, if he comes back and is anything close to what he was with the Mets, I don't think that's going to be enough, because the offense that they had last year certainly has not been a carbon copy of what we've seen this year. So we're going to have to keep that in mind with the Rangers, and I don't know if they're going to be sellers here by the deadline. I don't know who they could trade. We all know that they're not going to probably trade Max Scherzer, although he's a guy who's the perfect mercenary, but you can't trust him with his health, as I believe he'll be 40 years of age later on this month. But I wouldn't trust this Ranger team, despite them winning a World Series last year, to come back, make a run, and be a part of this American League wildcard race. I don't think they're even going to come close to a division. I think it's going to be Seattle and Houston when it's said and done, and watch them bite me in the ass when it's all said and done, just like the Astros have done to this point, although we still have, obviously, half a season to go. That's what I have in the American League. And as far as the National League goes, we could talk about the Mets and how they've also risen from the dead. They were 11 games under themselves, and now they are one game under. Tough weekend at Citi Field, where they did win the game on Friday night, and you had that big ceremony afterwards with Jose Iglesias singing that song that he had, and OMG was the theme, and all of his teammates were out in the field to support him in this post-game concert, which was just surprising to say the least, because Iglesias just got brought up here about 2-3 weeks ago, and I guess he's been a favorite in the clubhouse with a lot of the guys there. He's been a longtime veteran in the sport and was out there on the field with all of the teammates singing the song. And hopefully that's not going to be the antithesis of the Grimace Mets when they went on that 7-game winning streak, and you see Grimace in the stadium there the other night against the Yankees and over the weekend. And now after this OMG song, they are 0-2. They blew a game on Saturday where they had a 6-4 lead in the 8th inning. The comeback there by the Astros, they scored 3 in the 8th and 2 in the 9th to go ahead and win 9-6. And then yesterday they were down 3-0, actually 4-0, before they came back to tie. Then they had the rains come in where there was a long rain delay in the 9th inning in the bottom of the 9th. Mets didn't score. Astros scored a run in the top of the 10th where the Mets followed up with a run of themselves. And then what happened in the 11th? The floodgates came open as the Astros scored 5 runs in the top of the 11th. And of course, there was no rally to be heard from by the Amazons there in the bottom of the 11th. And now they go to Washington for 4 games. And these are important games because they're ahead of the Nationals in the standings. They swept the Nationals in Washington earlier this year. So you know there's going to be some payback. And who knows if the Nationals are going to have any short memory syndrome there, knowing that the Mets are coming to town and what they did to them earlier this year. In fact, that was the start of this stretch where up until this weekend, there was 6-0-2 in series that the Mets have won. And that started with the series against the Nationals there. What was it? In the early part of June. So let's see if they could bounce back, maybe win 3 out of 4, which would be great. Or if they're going to split here, I guess you take that if you're the Mets on the road. But let's see what the Mets are going to do. They're a game under. They've come all the way back only to take a couple of steps back. So I think the Mets, are they going to be buyers or sellers? I think they're going to be some buying for Steve Cohen, David Stearns, etc. But I don't know to what extent are they going to go out there and buy. They certainly need some bullpen help. They need some reinforcements, definitely, because their starting rotation, although Kodai Senga's on the mend, but we don't know when he's going to return, he being the NL Rookie of the Year runner-up from last year. But even with Luis Severino, who's pitched well, and even pitched well in his start a couple of days ago, and for guys like that, even Sean Manaea, you also had a contribution. Jose Quintana, I know, has been up and down, but their rotation, for whatever the reason, they piecemealed it together. But during this stretch, they've scored a ton of runs. And that's the reason why the Mets have been relevant and back in this NL playoff picture. But if their offense happens to go south, or if their offense is not going to follow up on the days where the pitching isn't going to be there for the Mets, then who knows? It could be a long July and August, especially coming off of a June that they've had, which we haven't seen in quite some time. Maybe 2022, they had a big June because that's when they won 101 games that year. But the Mets will certainly be a team that, at least for right now, are going to be in this playoff mix. Then you have the Padres, who played well. Padres are a team, as we talked about for years. They have the talent. Pitching, I know, right now may not be as stout with Yu Darvish and Joe Musgrove, and I believe one of those two guys have returned, but even with them being out of the rotation for quite some time, they've still been able to stay afloat. And I would think, and I believe Darvish has returned, I don't know about Musgrove, but for the Padres, we know about their offense even without Juan Soto, and even though Manny Machado's had a down year and has not really been that MVP caliber player that he has been in a Padre uniform in the past, but they've been able to do it. And even with Dylan Cease being brought over from the White Sox, and I know he's been up and down as well, but the Padres certainly have a team and the talent that could hang around and be around this playoff mix here from now until the end of the season. So the Padres are another team that you have to look out for. Who knows about the Cardinals? Now, the Cardinals, we know historically, and even with their pedigree, despite the fact that they have not won anything since the 2011 season, and with a young manager there, with Oliver Marmol, who knows if they're going to make any hay here throughout the last 3 months of the season. But the Cardinals, you also have to throw in there. I don't know if they're going to be a threat to the Brewers there in the NL Central, but we have to keep in mind whether or not the Cardinals are going to be buyers here to try to bring in some players to see whether or not that they could get themselves into the postseason and make a run, because the Cardinals have had success here over the last dozen years, despite the fact that it hasn't culminated in winning a World Series, but they have had their runs, they have had their stretches. So the Cardinals also are a team that will have to wait and see whether or not that they're going to make some moves and also be a part of October. And then you have the Arizona Diamondbacks. I'm only going to throw them in here, 41-43. They still have an outside shot here. And even though there's still plenty of baseball to be played, as we know, the defending National League champs, until I see them slip further, whether they're 4, 6, or 7 or 8 games under 500, then I could say, forget about it. Similar to the Texas Rangers, obviously their counterpart in the World Series last year. So I don't know if the Diamondbacks are going to get into that fifth gear to kind of put themselves in a position where, similar to last year, they got to 84 games. And we know what they did there come October before falling in 5 to the Texas Rangers in the Fall Classic. But I'm going to keep them there right now, even though they are 2 games under, based on what they did last year. And then you have the Pirates and also the San Francisco Giants. And I know they have that similar record, 41-43, 41-44. But I'm going to keep them there because they are within distance of the wild card. And I'll take a big look at it in a moment. But are you going to really trust the Giants as they're trying to find their own way here? Same for the Pirates, a young team trying to find themselves, trying to get an identity, obviously with the big ace there and Paul Skenes. And other guys there, whether your name is Brian Reynolds, whether your name is Cabrian Hayes, O'Neill Cruz, young team, some veterans there with Andrew McCutchen coming back to Pittsburgh. And who knows? I don't know if the Pirates are going to have any length in the season, or are we going to see them there hovering around the wild card standings as we get to August and September? I don't think so. And the same I feel for the Giants. But as for right now, I'll keep it as it is because they're only a couple of games back, and like I mentioned, are part of the NL wild card. So now as we take a big look at it, American League, here's where we're at. Now, the Yankees currently are percentage points behind the Baltimore Orioles for the division. So currently they have the first wild card spot. And whomever gets that spot, whether it is Baltimore or the Yankees, when it's all said and done, they will have that number one wild card spot and will host a wild card series. Now, the other two are going to be interesting because currently you have the Twins and Royals, and they're both separated by a game, 2 in the loss by the Twins as the 5th and 6th seeds there in the wild card race. Then you have the Red Sox, who have 3 games in hand on the Royals, tied in the loss column, but they are a game and a half back. So you have to keep that in mind because the loss, tied in the loss, is crucial. But we understand a lot can happen between now and the end of the year, but that's something just to keep in mind now. And then you have the Astros, who are 3.5 back, 2 in the loss of the Royals, 2 games back of the Red Sox there in the wild card race. And then you have the Tampa Bay Rays at 500, half game behind the Astros, 4 back of the 6th place and leading at the point, Kansas City Royals. We understand that could flip-flop from pretty much one day to the next, as like I mentioned, they're a game behind the Twins. So that is your wild card picture in the American League. And in the National League, You have the Braves, who are comfortable there at the fourth spot, 3.5 games or 3 games ahead of the San Diego Padres. And then they also have a half game lead over the Cardinals for the final spot in the National League wild card. And I don't know what's going on. Somebody's banging or drilling next door. But for the rest of the pack there, you have the Mets, who are 2 games behind and 1 loss behind the Cardinals. So keep that in mind as we move it along. Then you have the Diamondbacks, who, as I mentioned, 2.5. And then the Giants and Pirates are 3 games back. You want to throw in the Nationals? Now, the Nationals are 5 under. And I understand big series with the Mets, as I mentioned, but they are 4 games back. And then we can talk about the Reds and Cubs, 4.5 and 5. I don't want to include them because they are 6 and 7 games under 500. To me, you have to be at 500, although I give a break to the Diamondbacks, to the Pirates, as well as the Giants, because when you're 3 back of the final spot on the wild card, I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt. Although I shouldn't, but I will. So that's what we have there with the National League. We talked about the American League. And which one of those teams are going to be in the running for the 4th, 5th, or we'll just say the 5th and 6th, because the Yankees or Orioles are going to get that spot. And then we would think the Braves are going to be fine there as the 4th seed in the National League. So pretty much in the American League, you have wild card, that is. You have 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 teams fighting for 2 spots. And in the National League, right this very second, you have the same. 6 teams fighting for 2. Will it be the Cardinals and Padres when it's all said and done? Will it also be the Twins and Royals? Or will the Red Sox have something to say, as well as the Astros and maybe even the Tampa Bay Rays? And will the Mets have some magic in them to get themselves into the postseason? Same for Arizona as they try to duplicate what they did last year. And who knows about the Giants and Padres and Pirates, who I think will be out to see when it's all said and done. That's what you have there with baseball. Because with the standings overall, as far as the divisions, other than the AL East and West, as I mentioned before, I think it's a foregone conclusion. The Phillies have a comfortable lead there when it comes to the National League East. Same for the NL Central as well as the NL West with the Dodgers. They're currently 7.5 and 9 in the loss over the Padres. Brewers are 6 in the loss, 6.5 over the Cardinals. Phillies, 7 in the loss, 6. No, that's 8. My eyes were deceiving me there. Over the Braves. Guardians, 7 in the loss, 6 over the Twins. And Seattle, only 2 in the loss, but 3.5 over the Astros. And that could be a fight to the finish, considering that the Mariners, can you really fully trust them 100%? I understand, very good starting rotation, offense, pretty much from hunger. But I could see the Astros overtaking them and then watch them spit the bit, because remember how awful they were in the at home during the regular season and obviously in the postseason. Watch that come to roost when it's all said and done, but that's still a long ways off. But that's what I have with baseball, and that's what I wanted to focus in on at the start, to talk about the wild card, to talk about the teams other than the teams that we think are going to make it, as I mentioned earlier. And you have those 5 other teams that are going to flirt with the wild card. Who's going to come out of that here over the course of the next 3 months, obviously remains to be seen. But this is why we, for Sports Talk, for fodder, this is why we bring it up and kind of dissect and analyze where we're at the halfway point and who could take away, or who could be that team that could take away one of those 2 spots, especially when a Twins team, although has been in the postseason, but can you trust? Royals, this is uncharted territory where they have a 6th seed and a wild card here this late for the first time in almost a decade, when they won a World Series back in 2015. And then you have the Cardinals and Padres, who obviously have been fixtures here in the postseason over the last few years, but are they going to have enough? Are they going to make moves? Will the Mets make a move? What about the D-backs, etc.? So you know we're going to be on top of this, people, as we get deeper into the summer, obviously deeper into this month, before we get to the trade deadline. And lastly, let me take a look at the schedule here for the upcoming week. You have 3 games today. Houston at Toronto starts a series there. We talked about the Mets and the Nationals. 4 games there. And then you have Milwaukee at Colorado. Is that a wraparound series? No, it is not, because Milwaukee finished playing against the Cubs over the weekend. But your big games of note here to start off the week, Boston at Miami, and I'm talking about Boston only because they're part of the mix here. White Sox at Cleveland, huh? St. Louis at Pittsburgh, all right, that's one to keep an eye on, especially as Pittsburgh trying to find their way here in the National League. San Francisco at Atlanta, that's a series that San Francisco is going to have to show and prove. San Diego at Texas, Tampa at Kansas City, low-key series, but nothing that's going to jump off the page for you. Baltimore at Seattle, they got two division leaders there, so that's a litmus test for both teams. Arizona at Los Angeles to play the Dodgers, a rematch, although these teams have played since the division series last year. So you got some series to look at here as we get to the 4th of July, and we will certainly unpack it. I don't know about 4th of July just yet. I'll talk about that more on the back end of the podcast, whether or not, with that being a holiday, if there is going to be a podcast, so you have to stay tuned to the end of the podcast to find out. But other than that, baseball, no other key injuries. Let me pull this up real quick. Yes, should I bring this up for 5 seconds? I guess I probably should. Today is Bobby Bonilla Day. Bobby Bonilla, of course, the one-time Met who has the $1 million payment deferred from now over the course of the next 11 years. And we're not going to talk about that with Shohei Ohtani when his contract is up and he's going to have his money deferred until 2043. And I understand that Shohei Ohtani is not Bobby Bonilla. So for those who want to get at me, the Met fan, happy Bobby Bonilla Day, I could care less. To me, it's not even a thought in my mind unless it's on social media or here on the ESPN landing page for Major League Baseball. So big whoops to Bobby Bonilla Day, wherever he is, from the BX, went to Lehman High School. Big ups to Bobby, whatever you're doing, wherever you're at. Hopefully one day I could get you on here to kind of rap about your career, talk about baseball if you wish. But Bobby Bonilla Day, shouts to you, my man. And for those who want to get at me, I could care less. That's what I got with baseball. Now let's lace up the high tops and talk about what's happening on the court with the association. And you have some free agency that has been, I'm not going to say it's been crazy. A lot of players have re-signed with their current teams, whether it's James Harden, 2 years, $70 million to be a part of the Clippers. Even Tyrese Maxey gets a big deal there. 5 years, $204 million. Scottie Barnes also re-ups. You have a lot of these players that have pretty much signed on with their teams that will be moving forward, getting their big deals with their current ball clubs. Even Emmanuel Quickley signed an $175 million deal to stay with the Toronto Raptors. So you got that. But there has been one big catch. And it's not really a deep free agent roster. I know you have Klay Thompson. Where he's going to go, who knows? I think he'd be a good fit in Orlando, if you ask me. Leader, has won. I think he would be a perfect fit to be a part of that young roster and see if they could go where he goes. Now, we know Klay Thompson could still shoot the hell out of the rock, but certainly not the two-way player that he once was. So that is just my thought there. And then you also have DeMar DeRozan. Where does he go? He's still a very good player, a guy that could certainly be a good fit to a young team, or maybe even to a veteran-laden team that could be maybe not the final piece, but a good piece to maybe navigate that team to an NBA final, or at least deep into a playoff, maybe even a conference final. OKC, anybody? I think he would be a good fit there. I don't know what their cap situation is, but I think to have a guy like that, veteran, could play both ends of the floor, he would be a great fit there, if you ask me, for the Thunder. But Paul George is the big guy off the board, formerly with the Clippers, as we know, tried to work a 4-year deal with them, but the Clippers only wanted to give him 3 years. So he signs with the Philadelphia 76ers, 4 years, $212 million. The pros, we know what the pros are. Perennial all-star, came back from that horrific injury many years ago, as we know. A guy who is a two-way player, averaged 22 points a game last year, but had career highs in field goal percentage, three-point shooting. We know plays both ends of the floor. A lot of good pros when it comes to Paul George. But here are the cons. And there are two big ones. The one is obvious. Health. Now, he played in 74 games last year, which is, for him, that's like playing an 82-game season. But this is the bigger con and the biggest one of all, that the Sixers slid the contract to get the John Hancock on that document. 34 years of age. So it's not as if his best days are ahead of him. And it's not to say his best days are behind him, but You know where I'm coming from here, people. But even more so, he does not have the clutch gene. He is not a guy that when the money's on the line that you could automatically bank on as a guy who's going to deliver. He would scare the hell out of me, Philadelphia. And here's your warning to the fans of the city of brotherly love. To me, when the spotlight is at its brightest, that's where he shrinks. And yes, let's look at the recent track record. I get it. They were down 2-1 to the Dallas Mavericks in the first round. They had a 31-point lead where the Mavericks came all the way back furiously. James Harden was a big part of that fourth quarter, and we understand he is not one to be trusted, especially in a big spot. But George, who had 33 points in that game and did make big shots and was crucial throughout the course of the entire game, but even in the fourth quarter, that was more in James Harden, but still, George had made some big buckets, including a big three there. I believe it was 107-105 to make it 110-105, and that was the biggest bucket of the game. But where was he in games 5 and 6? Where was he at home in game 5 when they could have taken a 3-2 series lead? And then, season on the line, where was he to bail him out, to salvage him, to bring him back home, to play in a game 7? Puts up paltry numbers, is invisible in these spots, and like I mentioned, he just shrinks like a violet in the summer sun. I don't know how else to put it, people, but that is the truth. And don't let me go back to other playoff performances in the past, in the bubble, in a game 7 against Denver, when he's taking shots and it's hitting off the side of the backboard. Paul George, he's talented. Paul George, he's a very good player. Not a great player in my eyes. And what makes him not great is that he's not clutch. He's not a guy that you can rely on. Yes, who cares if he scores 47 points against Sacramento in the middle of January? Or yes, he could have a 33-point performance in a game 4 when they need it. But where is he in a game 5, game 6, game 7? And the aforementioned shot off the side of the backboard, that was in a game 7. So he would scare the hell out of me, Philadelphia fans. So you've been warned. I'm just putting it out there. Go back, history books. Go back just to this past postseason. Look up his numbers. In fact, you know what? Real quick, I'll do it for you. His numbers in games 5 and 6 were atrocious. And that's all there is to it. And not to say that he has to be 30-10 every game. I understand that. This isn't a situation where he has to rise above every expectation and be that guy day in and day out. But if you want to be amongst the greats, the guys who fill the box score, the guy who makes the big basket and big shots and big spots, and he did so in game 4, as I just mentioned. But one more time, when you get deep into a postseason, when you get deep into a series, and you're looking for not only just a big shot, but you're looking for big buckets, and you're looking for just clutch performances to bail your team out, to get yourself to a point where you could advance to the next series, where you could go ahead and get deeper into the playoffs and do big things in big spots. And what happens? Here we go. Game number 5, he scored 33 points. He was fantastic. Oh, excuse me, game 4. Game 5, 15 points on 4-for-13 shooting. And you lose. Get ready for this, people. Here was his final score, and I even talked about this. You can go back to the receipts there sometime in late April. They lost by 30 at home. Who does that? And then in game 6, when it was do or die, and they had to save their season, to save their life, they lose 114-101. All right, they lose the game. Fine. Paul George, what did you score? 26, 28? What did you do in the game? 42 minutes, 6-for-18, 2-for-10 from 3, 18 points. Case closed. One more time, Philly Sixer fans. You've been warned. Other free agents here. Now, again, you don't have a sexy lot here. Chris Paul's now a free agent. We understand he's long in the tooth. He signed with the San Antonio Spurs 1 year to kind of show the ropes there with Wemby and a young team and to work with Pop. He's going to be a pseudo coach on that court. And good for Chris Paul as he's now, who knows, is this going to be his final year? We understand injuries have curtailed the last few years, especially in the playoffs. But we'll have to wait and see how Chris Paul, if he could raise the stock a little bit, maybe trade deadline, expiring contract, 1 year. I don't even know what the terms are. Maybe he could get onto a team where he could push to try to ring chase and go for a championship title. That we'll have to wait and see. But Other guys that are on that list, whether your name is Jonas Valanciunas, he's a very good guy, very good player, good guy who offensively could, in his sleep, give you a double-double night in and night out. Where does he go? We'll have to wait and see on that. KCP signs with Orlando. That's another good pickup by them to complement their young players, a defensive force there on that end of the court, and has won a championship, as we know, with two, in fact, with the Nuggets and the Lakers in the bubble. So you have that. But other than that, you don't really have a deep free agent pool that you could dive into that over the next few days, that when we recap it, whether I do come back on Thursday or you could watch on YouTube my shorts there where I'll talk about what's happening in sports, you may not have much here with the free agency pool here over the next few days, considering George is off the table. All right, Klay Thompson, we got to wait and see what's going to happen with him, as well as DeMar DeRozan. But it's not the class of 2010 where you had LeBron, Chris Bosh, D-Wade, etc. So you just have to keep that in mind as this week or these next few days move along. Then you have a trade where Atlanta traded Jahante Murray to New Orleans for Larry Nance Jr., a 2025 first-round pick, and other players that was sent from the Pelicans to the Hawks. Now, Murray, I know that there was a lot of rumblings about he and Trae Young there, and there had to be a separation of the two. I guess the Hawks felt that they should keep Trae Young more so than Murray, considering that he was traded on draft day for Luka Doncic, as we know. And I guess maybe they'd rather have Young a part of their mix to see where the Hawks could go as they try to piecemeal it together with their number one pick that they brought in, obviously the kid from France, Reese Hoshea, Zachary first name. So for Atlanta, they had to unload Murray. So let's see how he does in New Orleans with CJ McCollum, with Zion, etc. Maybe a breath of fresh air. Who knows? We'll have to wait and see on that. Then you had some coaching news where the name is JB Bickerstaff. He gets the job in Detroit. Bit of a raw deal, if you ask me, with Cleveland. He did win a round against Orlando. And then without Donovan Mitchell, Jared Allen did not have two of his five starters there. They lose to the Celtics in five games. And one of those games that they won was a game two where they won by 24. Why they let him go, I don't know. But now let's see if he could be a part of that reclamation project in the Motor City to kind of bring them back to respectability. So we'll have to wait and see there. And that's what you have there with the NBA. There, like I said, no other big-time free agents, nothing else to really unpack. Kenny Atkinson got hired by the Cavaliers, speaking of which, I didn't mention that on Thursday's pod. That's a good hire. Atkinson was a very good coach there with the Nets, especially prior to Kyrie and KD getting there. Remember, they made it to the postseason with guys like D'Angelo Russell. And Russell's coming back to the Lakers, so that may throw a wrinkle into what the Lakers may do this offseason, so you have to keep that in mind as well. But Kenny Atkinson was a very good coach. We understand he got jettisoned there from the Brooklyn Nets when they brought in Steve Nash, and then he went to Golden State as an assistant, won a championship there in 2022, and now finds his way back as a head coach. So let's see what he does there in Cleveland. They have the talent. Now, Donovan Mitchell, that is going to be the big question mark there on whether or not he's going to be part of a trade here this offseason, because he will be a free agent after next year. And if the Cavaliers are going to sign him long term, I think it would be wise for them to do so, because they're probably not going to get back the return that they would get for a guy like Donovan Mitchell. So that is something that we'll have to keep on our radar here over the course of the summer, whether or not he does get traded and who comes back in return, or if he stays the season without being re-signed and goes into next year's free agency as a chance to bank on a big time max deal. So that's something we'll have to pay attention to. And then, do I have to get into LeBron? I guess I have to spend a minute or two, because he had opted out of his contract. This is after the Lakers signed, or I should say drafted, Bronny James. Now, the Lakers, let's face it, the front office, I don't want to say they're clueless, but it's a rudderless ship. We understand Jeannie Buss, Rob Pelinka, they're just trying to do what they can, considering that there are limitations there with their team. They signed Austin Reeves last year. I get it that they have some bit parts there with Rui Hachimura. We know about LeBron AD. Now, LeBron said, or at least it's been reported, that he's looking for a longer-term deal, whether that means a two-year deal plus a one, Or maybe just a solid three-year deal where he'll take a bit of a discount. Now, he was going to go into this year with $51 million on the ledger. So now what is he going to do? Is he going to go for 50, meaning three for 150 with an opt-out, a player opt after year two? Who knows? But here's where the Lakers are at fault. I get it. They got to sell seats. And I get it. LeBron James is still box office. He's still an attraction. He is. I get it. The Lakers. But they would be afraid to make a pivot here. And knowing that they drafted Bronny James, this is a deal where with a new coach and with LeBron James' son there, I'm not going to say that this is going to be an unmitigated disaster, but it's certainly not going to be peaches and cream, coconuts and palm trees, to say the least. Because whatever J.J. Redick's going to implement to the team, and I understand he's going to probably have to placate LeBron a little bit, and who knows what's going to happen here throughout the course of this offseason. And I'm just going to start with this offseason with Bronny James first before I even get to LeBron himself. Bronny's going to have summer league here in the next week or so. How he's going to perform there, who knows? Is there going to be a minutes regulation considering the health issues that he had last year? And I understand he's cleared to play, medically fine, etc. But that's something that I'm sure the Lakers are keeping in the back of their mind as far as how many minutes Bronny's going to play here. Because let's just say he kills it and becomes the Summer League MVP. Now the expectations are going to be ratcheted up further for him to not only make the team and maybe not start in a G League somewhere, but also be a part of the rotation, whether it's 8, 9, or 10 men. So you're going to have that to deal with if you're the Lakers. On top of LeBron, who we think is going to sign here in the coming days to, I would think, a three-year deal. And we know he takes phenomenal shape and keeps his body in order. And there is obviously no knock when it comes to him being prepared and ready to go come training camp at the start of the season. But now the expectation is if LeBron is going to be there and if Bronny has a killer summer league, maybe not MVP, but let's say the numbers are great, you know there's going to be a little bit of a nudge-nudge, wink-wink to the coach there, J.J. Redick, and maybe even words being expressed to Rob Pelinka. And then you're going to have him maybe take over whomever that 8th or 9th spot on the bench would be or in the rotation to a guy that maybe would deserve it. And now we have to placate LeBron. And this is a team, mind you, that is good enough to make the postseason, but they're not good enough to get to a conference final or even an NBA final. And before you say, well, Jay Reels, they made it to the conference final in last year, not this past season, but the year before. Yes, they did, but they got a couple of breaks along the way when you think about it, because they beat up a Memphis team who was, I'm not going to say down and out, but they didn't have a full healthy team with guys like Steven Adams and John Morant, certainly with all the stuff that was going on with him off the court. That was a disaster for a young Grizzly team who couldn't get it out of their own way in that first round series. And then they beat the Golden State Warriors in the second round, where Golden State, LA had their way with them, and even though Golden State came off of a 7-game grueling series against the Sacramento Kings, but pretty much they left their series in Sacramento, their hearts there, because they pretty much have nothing left for the Lakers. And then, of course, in the conference final, they got swept by the Nuggets and the eventual champion. And this year, we saw what happened with them getting bounced out of the first round again by the Denver Nuggets. So, yes, a lot of things that happen. You do have LeBron, you do have AD, and cast the characters there, and maybe with D'Angelo Russell back, but still, no guarantees. So that's what you have there with the Lakers situation. They had to, I guess he was there, and they had to draft him just to pacify LeBron. And now let's see how the soap opera is going to unfold here throughout the course of the summer and into the fall, because you know this will be a soap opera. That's what I have with the NBA. Let me lace up my skates and go through the NHL. As you had the draft day on Friday night, Macklin Celebrini, the first round overall pick by the San Jose Sharks, and it was a rather quiet night for round one. Not a lot of trades, not a lot of wheeling and dealing. Yes, there was some, but nothing to the extent where it really shocked you or surprised you by what took place there from a transaction angle. But then you turn your attention to Saturday, and what happened there? You had trades, you had a lot of things go down there, especially when it comes to the Tampa Bay Lightning. The Lightning traded their longtime defenseman, Mikhail Sergachev, who signed an 8-year deal last year and had a no-trade clause up until July 1st. And what happened? They traded him 2 days, or really a day and a half before the no trade clause were to kick in, they shipped him to Utah, of all places. And for him to be dealt, I know that had to be crushing for him. He was a part of that defense there, especially during that cup run, or those cup years, the 3 years that they went to the cup, where they won the first two back-to-back. And Sergachev, who came over for that gruesome broken leg there in the middle of the season before coming back into the postseason valiantly before bowing out to the Panthers there in five games. And by them trading Sergachev as well as Tanner Jeannot to the Kings, opened up and freed some cap space to see if they could bring back Steven Stamkos, the longtime captain, and a guy that's going to have his number 91 raised to the roof one day. So they're looking to bring him back. But one thing they did do was they traded for Jake Guentzel, the former Penguin who got traded to the Carolina Hurricanes right at the deadline, and for Guentzel to be now traded to the Lightning and then signed to an 8-year deal. Terms undisclosed at this moment, but now they have another big-time goal scorer and playmaker to go along with guys like Braden Point and Nikita Kucherov, and certainly adds more depth to their scoring, which is huge, knowing that the Rangers have a lot of depth there, and obviously the Panthers and what they did throughout the course of this postseason winning a cup, and we know about Edmonton and their depth, so they figured that they had to bring this guy back. And let's see about Stamkos, who, as we mentioned, longtime captain and a guy who is the pulse of that team. So let's see in the coming days if he's going to be a guy that's going to come back and add some more scoring punch to their lineup. Then you also had other players that were being traded, whether your name is Linus Ullmark, which was in the middle of last week, from Boston to Ottawa for Mark Kostelec, Jonas Korpisalo, who's also a netminder, and this year's first-round pick. So Jeremy Swayman, he is the guy in Boston to be between the pipes from here and moving forward. And Ullmark, let's see what he does in Ottawa as a guy who's looking to kind of resuscitate his career after a big-time regular season 2 years ago. And this past season, kind of uncertain. So we'll see what happens with him. But for a lot of other teams that have been trying to move and shake here with the NHL and the free agency period, which will, of course, has commenced today. And as I'm just pulling it up here just to make sure nothing else has come down the pike as of right this moment. As a matter of fact, then I got some confirmation. Guentzel signs a 7-year deal worth $63 million. And then I see Patrick Kane re-ups with the Red Wings 1 year extension. And then you had Sam Reinhart, who got the game-winning goals we know in the Stanley Cup Final Game 7 for the Panthers. Also agrees, 8 years, $69 million deal. So you already have some guys that are re-signing with their current teams. So that's something that could be a theme here, similar to what we've seen here with the NBA, other than Paul George, as we know. But I would think this is going to be a frenzy here over the next few days. We'll wait and see what's going to happen. I don't know if a lot of teams are going to be geeked up to bring in guys like an aging guys, whether your name is Vladimir Tarasenko, who just finished coming off of winning a cup with the Panthers, former Panther there, Jonathan Marchessault, Jake DeBrusk. Those are guys that are pretty much at the top of the free agent list. We'll see where they go here in the coming days as, one more time, the curtain raises on the free agent year. And other than that, the Maple Leafs, they acquired Chris Tanev to see if they can negotiate exclusive deal with him. They got him from the Dallas Stars. But here's what I'm going to look at as far as my team, the Islanders, and what they need to do to kind of get themselves back toward respectability. And I get it, they made it into the postseason the last 2 years and haven't done anything but that, because they've been out of the first round by the same team the last 2 years, that being the Carolina Hurricanes. In their first round draft pick, they got a scorer named Cole Yzerman, and no, not a relative of the Red Wing great Steve Yzerman. His last name is spelled E-I-S-E-R-M-A-N, excuse me, not Y-Z-E-R-M-A-N. A lot of people think he was the best scorer in the draft. And he dropped all the way down to, I believe it was 20. Should know that off the top of my head, Jay Reels. But because the Islanders made the playoffs, he was a guy that was a middle to late first round pick. And there's a ton of potential with this kid based on what I've read. But scouts want to see more. And what does that mean? Does that mean that he doesn't have a big time motor? Does it mean that he floats in and out of these games? Does it mean that you have to corral him here at times, whether or not he just wants to score and doesn't defend, doesn't back check? Kind of like a guy who is a big-time goal scorer, but when you see odd man rushes or a guy who's not coming up the ice to forecheck, is he going to be an issue? Now, of course, that's coaching, and that's going to be a huge part of it. But if he's a guy that is a good scorer and one of the top in the draft, and the reason why he fell down was because in the draft, the reason why he fell is because maybe he's lazy or doesn't have a motor, or, as I mentioned, is not in these games 100%. Well, hopefully he can snap out of it if that's going to be the case, because the Islanders are going to need a scoring, and the Islanders are going to need as many reinforcements as possible. I don't know if you're going to bring in a guy like Jake DeBrusk. I don't know if you're going to bring in veterans like Jonathan Marchessault, who's won a cup, which would be good, but is that going to be good enough to compete with teams like the Rangers, the Hurricanes, the Panthers, the Bruins, the Maple Leafs, teams like that? And you know there are going to be other teams that are going to try to improve here along the way. So the Islanders, I don't know what's going to be in them, what is going to unfold here as they try to be relevant, as they try to get themselves together to be amongst the ranks of the top teams. Not that they're going to be with those teams, but at least can they show some life? Can they make some moves in order for us Islander fans to believe that they're doing something, that they're trending in the right direction? Lou Lamoriello, where have you been? Let's go. Come on. So that's my shout out there for the Islander GM. And besides that, that's what I have here when it comes to the National Hockey League. As far as the tennis goes, as I lace up my tennis shoes and break out the racket here, Wimbledon at the All England Club commences today. And the one thing, or the two storylines that I'm going to look at here, number one, Novak Djokovic. And the reason why I bring him up is because, remember, he had to withdraw from the French Open because of a knee injury. He suffered a meniscus tear, which already seems to be, if not 100%, close to it, because he is a guy that knows what he puts into his body, his training, etc. That's not to say nobody else on the tour does, but for him to respond and come back here to where he's going to go at it, I believe his first match maybe tomorrow, but for Djokovic, this is going to be a true test to see whether or not that knee's going to respond, how well it's going to be on that grass surface. A lot of sliding, maybe not as much cutting, as we all know he's going to have his moments where he's going to cut, but the grass at least is going to be a little bit of a give, some resiliency. It's not the hard court where it's going to take a bit of a beating, especially considering it's only been 3.5, maybe 4 weeks since the last time he tested that knee. And for Djokovic, it's a matter of how far he's going to go, because we know guys like Carlos Alcaraz and Jannik Sinner and others such as Holger Rune, Casper Ruud, even an up-and-comer like Tommy Paul, Taylor Fritz, Stefanos Tsitsipas, as well as Daniil Medvedev, Alexander Zverev, Alexei Rublev. Do you have a very stout and stiff competition there? Now, we know that the cream at the top is Djokovic, Sinner, Alcaraz. Medvedev has won a final, but everybody else is kind of floating around under that first tier. But if Djokovic does happen to withdraw or comes up lame again, it's going to be fascinating to see whether or not it's going to be Alcaraz, Sinner, and everybody else in the field, or can any one of those aforementioned guys kind of swoop in, get to a final, and maybe pull off an upset. So that's the one angle that I have there with Wimbledon. And then the other on the women's side, can Iga Świątek finally get to the mountaintop and win a Wimbledon? I believe the furthest she's been is a quarterfinal. And this is from someone who's won 5 Grand Slams already, albeit 4 of them on the clay surface at the French Open. But with her being the number one player and with her not being able to dominate this surface, and I get it, people aren't going to be adapt to going from clay to grass, or a lot of these surfaces are hardwood. But for Świątek, now, we know she's number one. I'm not knocking her status and where she belongs on the pecking order or in the pecking order when it comes to women's tennis players. Let's regroup here, Jay Reels. But for Świątek to really stamp her as not only with her being just number one, but a force, a player that now has gotten her groove to the point that it's not just about the French Open. Her other win, I believe, was the U.S. Open 3 years ago. Was that the year? No, that maybe that been the year that Emma Raducanu won in 2021, maybe 2 years ago. But now this is where Swiatek is going to have to silence the critics, the doubters. I think she's going to come out on top of this tournament. I'm going to give her that breakthrough. But if she bows out in a quarterfinal or in a fourth round, or dare I even say earlier than that, then it has to be in either in between her ears or something in her chest where she's not standing up and delivering. So she is going to be a big focal point because of her coming off of a Grand Slam. And I know it's tough to win back-to-back Grand Slam majors. And not to say that she's head and shoulders above everybody else, because you do have Aryna Sabalenka, Elena Rybakina, Coco Gauff. Those are opponents that certainly, maybe not Gauff because she's an 11-1 lifetime against Coco, but Sabalenka, even Rybakina, Jessica Pegula is going to be back in the Wimbledon here because she did not play in the French due to some nagging injuries. So let's see if Pegula is going to have any length. Madison Keys, who I know is a little bit further down on the top-ranked players in the world. But how I'm going to look at it here is that Ange DeBoer is another one too, who's also fallen off here in the last year or so. But I think this is going to be Swiatek's tournament to lose. If she comes out, whether, like I mentioned, early in this opening week or the early part of the next week, I'm going to have to really question long and hard whether or not Swiatek is one that, off the clay surface, is she really that dominant number one player in the world that she is? And I understand her record and her ranking says it is, but I want to see more. And I feel like as a tennis, not aficionado by any stretch, but as a tennis fan from afar, I need to see more. I need to see what she's made of. I want to see what she's built. Because to me, the clay, she could not win another French Open for 3 years and I'll be fine with it. Let me see her win a Wimbledon. Let me see her go back to the US Open and win. Go down under and win the Australian. That will really impress me as opposed to just doing her thing at the French and then where she come the following month at Wimbledon. So that's going to be an interesting angle, something that obviously I'll keep an eye on here as we get deeper into this tournament and obviously with this first week unveiling. So those are a couple of things to keep in mind. As far as the men's go, now Alcaraz won last year. Is he going to win back-to-back? I'm going to say yes. That's a bit of a reach, I think, only because I think Alcaraz and Sinner, they will face one another before we get to a final. And if you do get to one, that could be a Djokovic-Sinner or Djokovic-Alcaraz final. And we saw Alcaraz and Djokovic last year before you had the Spaniard win his first ever Wimbledon. So should be fascinating, should be interesting. I'm looking forward to it. Kicks off today. I don't know if I have any early scores, but I'll see if I can pull that up real quick before I say goodbye. And then finally, as I lace up my other gloves and get into the octagon to talk about the MMA Fight 303 on Saturday, and what we have there is a scenario where Alex Pereira, and you know I'm going to butcher these names, people, so you're going to have to forgive me ahead of time, but you had for Alex Pereira go up against Yuri Prokasha, these names sometimes I just get tongue-tied, so my apologies. I'll just call him Yuri for now. But Pereira regains his light heavyweight belt, knocking him out in the second round with that head kick. I don't know if you've seen it, but that was a blur, and it put Yuri to the canvas and out for good. Second time that Pereira has beaten Yuri, and I have to say his last name, people. Prochazka, I guess that's how you pronounce it. Second time he's beaten Prochazka. He beat him back in November and now beats him here. I guess it was a rematch to see whether or not Prochazka could match wits, talent, ability, etc. against Pereira, but came up short. And now let's see what's going to happen with Pereira next. Now, Pereira didn't knock him down in the first round, so that was a precursor to the head kick that Prochazka got before he was down for the count. And Pereira, another victory for him. I believe he's 30-5. So we'll see where Pereira and his direct trajectory will go to see where his next bout will be. But that was pretty much your fight there. Second round KO for one Alex Pereira. And that'll do it, my good people. Now, I don't know if I'll be back here on Thursday. And I will say right now, I will not. That may change, and if it does, go to my YouTube channel, @JReels, for any latest updates. You can go to my socials, but certainly I'll post a video there on my YouTube channel, which I do daily. I post 1 minute shorts about what's happening in sports, give you my opinion, give me my quick take, hot take, whatever you want to call it. As you could follow me there to get an up to the minute review, preview, status, news item on that particular channel. So thank you so much for following, for those who have. And if you haven't, please, people, follow me on YouTube. Trying to build that subscriber base, trying to get more people to be a part of the podcast as far as guests goes. And the more subscribers I get, the more that the algorithm and the more that the people out there will know of me and get a chance to want to say, hey, I'll go on with Jay Reels to babble for half hour, 45, maybe even an hour's worth of time to discuss their experience of what happened in the world of sports. So if you could do so, I greatly appreciate it. On top of being able to know when or not, whether or not I'm going to be on the air come Thursday, 4th of July, it is a holiday. So you'll have to stay tuned for that. But until then, or maybe even next Monday, that'll do it. Another episode in the books. Thank you so much for stopping by, for carving out precious time out of your day to listen to what it is they have to say about what goes on in the world of sports. If you haven't done so, please subscribe, rate, and review. Throw me a few stars. Write a review on any of the podcast platforms that you listen to, as well as the YouTube channel at Jay Reels. If you want to hit me up with any questions, comments, suggestions, you can do so at the following: Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, the Jay Reels Podcast, Twitter, X, Jay Reels 1, just the number, the old-fashioned way, at the jayreelspodcast at gmail.com. I'll be more than happy to follow up with you guys and gals, because whether you do or do not know, this is what I love to do, people. It's in the blood. It's in the DNA. As I mentioned, full-time content creator, doing what I love, trying to make a living out of this, trying to earn some income. And one more time, I need your help, because I'm not going anywhere as long as I'm alive and breathing. I will continue to deliver the fire, passion, energy, fury with my thoughts, opinions, critiques, praise, analysis, feelings on anything and everything that happens on the world of the diamond, ice, gridiron, hardwood, golf course, racetrack, tennis court, boxing ring, octagon, you name it. From my lips to your ears, from my heart to your soul, from where I am to wherever you are, the Jay Reels Podcast always comes correct, direct, and in full effect. From the South Bronx, the South Beach, the South Central, the South Pacific, and all points beyond, peace, love, and God bless everybody. And until next time on the Jay Reels Podcast, on the flip, baby.